On April 18th, 2006, I had my first confirmed kill. This man was innocent. I don't know his name. He was walking back to his house, and I shot him in front of his friend and his father. The first round didn't kill him after I had hit him up here in his neck area. Afterwards, he started screaming and looked right into my eyes. So I took another shot and took him out. We were all congratulated after we had our first kills. My company commander personally congratulated me. This is the same individual who had stated that whoever gets their first kill by stabbing them to death will get a 4-day pass when we return from Iraq.
One day, the battalion JAG officer, who's basically our battalion legal counsel, he pulled us all together, made sure the embedded reporters weren't there with us at the time, and proceeded to basically give us what was going to be a rules of engagement brief for Fallujah. Basically, we're going to be operating under the assumption that everyone was hostile. He sort of wrapped up the brief by sort of going, okay, Marines, you see an individual with a weapon, what do you do? Kill him. You see an individual with a pair of binoculars, what do you do? Kill him. You see an individual with a cell phone out, kill him. You see an individual who maybe not carrying anything or displaying any specific hostile action or intent, running from, say, one building to another, or running across the street, or even running away from you, assume that he is maneuvering against you, and kill him.
When they kicked in the door of this house, what they found was they hit three people inside the wedding party. One of them was an adult man who was, you know, slightly wounded. Another young girl, maybe 10, was slightly wounded. But what really got me was there was another girl who was maybe 6 or 7, and she was dead. She had been shot by a bunch of, you know, teenage American kids.
My first mission was a ride with the unit that we were replacing. We had half of our men and half of their men go out, and they got to show us the sector that we were going to operate in for the next year. At the time, there was a curfew in operation where Iraqis were not supposed to be outside of their houses after dark. We rolled around our sector, and eventually we came upon two men that were in the field. They were out after curfew, and they were not U.S. military or coalition forces. The men on the gun proceeded to open fire on these men, killing both of them where they stood. Mark 19, fully automated, belt-fed grenade launchers, where you hold the butterfly down and grenades fly out the other end. Once we got to these men, they were blown into pieces. There was no sign of any sort of weapons, any sort of anything upon them. I was told by the sergeant that we were replacing that these men were out in their fields farming, because the periodic electricity, the pumps that irrigated their fields only operated while they had electricity, which meant to farm their fields, sometimes they had to go out into the dark, knowingly risking the curfew to farm their fields. I asked the sergeant, why did he fire upon these men if he knew that they were farming in their field? And he told me because they were out after curfew. The men I served with were honorable soldiers. They were professionals. They went to Iraq hoping to do good, hoping to do right. They went to Iraq to defend their country, to defend their neighbors, and defend their citizens. However, we found rapidly that that was not the case. In the massive confusion, it's almost startling how little control you have and how much fear perpetuates you to not really concern yourself with things like rules of engagement and Geneva Conventions.
This man right here was my third confirmed kill. As you can see, he was riding his bicycle. His body was dragged about 10 feet to the right of him, where his body was thrown behind a rock wall and his bicycle was thrown on top of him. Later on in the day, we went ahead. We had CBS Laura Logan with us, but she was with the other squad, and so she wasn't with us. So myself and two other people went ahead and took out some individuals because we were excited about the firefight we had just gone into, and we didn't have a cameraman or woman with us. Anytime we did have embedded reporters with us, our actions would change drastically. We never acted the same. We were always on key with everything, did everything by the books. A lot of the raids and patrols we did were at the night, around 3 o'clock in the morning, around there. And what we would do is just kick in the doors and terrorize the families. If the men of the household were giving us problems, we'd go ahead and take care of them any way we felt necessary, whether it be choking them or slamming their head against the walls. On my wrist, there is Arabic for F you. I got that put on my wrist just 2 weeks before we went to Iraq because that was my choking hand. And anytime I felt the need to take out aggression, I would go ahead and use it. With that being said, that is my testimony. I just want to say that I am sorry for the hate and destruction that I have inflicted on innocent people. And I'm sorry for the hate and destruction that others have inflicted on innocent people. And that until people hear about what is going on with this war, it will continue to happen and people will continue to die. I am sorry for the things that I did. I am no longer the monster that I once was. Thank you.
Another time that I was out on patrol in the Kennedy Street area, as I said, part of our mission was to meet and greet the local population and find out what their problems were. And so I approached a man with my interpreter on the side of the road, and I asked him, I said, look, are your lives better because we're here? Are you safer? Do you feel more secure? Do you feel like we are liberating you? And that man looked at me straight in the eye, and he said, mister, we Iraqis know that you have good intentions here. But the fact of the matter is, before America invaded, we didn't have to worry about car bombs in our neighborhoods. We didn't have to worry about the safety of our own children as they walk to school. And we didn't have to worry about U.S. soldiers shooting at us as we drive up and down our own streets.
And at night, American soldiers are rolling around your streets telling you that you can't go outside and you can't talk to your friends, you can't enjoy yourself, you can't gather outside the coffee house or the chai shop, because if you go out past dark, you're committing a crime. So essentially, during the summer months, Sadr City was a prison. 3.2 million people in Sadr City were prisoners of war. I was a great soldier once upon a time. And now I stand here to fight for my brothers more than I ever could while I wore a uniform.